Welcome back to the Human Magic Podcast. My name is Jack Hutchcraft. I'm a journalist and I'm playing a rock band called Waco. This is called Human Magic because that's the name of our debut album, Human Magic. This podcast is where, you know, I speak to creatives and dreamers, believers and thinkers, big thinkers, in order to help me and hopefully help you guys who are listening, help us work out how to live peacefully in this world, or at least understand where other people are coming from, maybe. Today, I'm speaking with... still in quarantine, by the way. Everyone knows that, right? Everyone's still in quarantine. Dare I say I'm kind of enjoying it. I don't know, it's a bit controversial, but I'm making the most of it, should I say. I work from home a lot anyway, so I've just got my housemates in the house now, so it's quite nice to have a bit of company. Today is a conversation I had with Sam Walton. Sam Walton is an activist, and he's a Quaker as well. So basically, a bit of background, I was writing a piece for the I newspaper about Quakers, basically, about Quakerism, which is a denomination of Christianity. But it's pretty cool. It's quite a modern approach to what they believe, and kind of they're Christian non-conformists, and they believe that there should be no hierarchy in the church, and that we have the spirit of God within us all, and almost quite Buddhist. I thought it's comparable to Buddhism in some ways. It's you know, everyone is. You are important. You don't bow down to any false idols, any priest, any pastor, anything like that. That actually you've got a divinity within you. I quite like that idea. I'm not a Quaker myself, but I did like the idea. I like that kind of approach. So I spoke with Sam Walton because he's a bit of a renegade Quaker, I would say. He's broke into, well, do you know what, I'll let him tell the story. He's a real, he told me an amazing story when I interviewed him, and it was about him breaking into a military air base to try and sabotage some fighter jets that were destined to be sold to Saudi Arabia that then would be used for war crimes. It's a pretty crazy tale, but this is a big part of Quakerism, as he kind of talks about. Quakerism is a lot about social justice, and a lot of them are involved in climate activism and different types of activism. So, although it's a very old school religion, you know, a lot of it is kind of well adapted to the modern age, I think. I'm just thinking out loud now. So yeah, Sam Walton. I spoke to him in a vegan cafe in Brixton. Very cool vegan cafe in Brixton. It was actually attached to a church. Nothing to do with the church, but it was just a funny coincidence, I reckon. All right, cool. I'll catch up with you at the end, and we'll have a debrief. Peace. Sit on anything.
Great.
So. Can you introduce yourself and tell me, I don't know what you do, I know you're involved in activism, but like, what do you do?
Well, so my name's Sam Walton.
Yeah.
And I am involved in a lot of activism. At the moment, most of it's to do with stuff against the arms trade and stuff around holding the police to account for calling everyone terrorists when they're not.
Right, okay. And how did you find Quakerism? Was it something you were brought up as, or yeah, did you find it later?
So I was born a Quaker. And I think in that way I'm almost a little bit... A remarkably few Quakers were born into it.
Oh, really? Kind of
in reach?
Yeah.
You know, like, not like outreach to new people, in reach to like people brought up as Quakers. Isn't, because we're just like, do what you want.
Right, okay.
So we're like, hey, we think this, but you know, you think what you want.
And was that what your family were like to get with you?
Yeah, absolutely. But they explained things and they did make sense to me, and they, like, I kind of went away for it for a few years, and then I was like, you know, they explain that, you know, everyone's equal. And that does make sense. And if everyone's equal, maybe we should treat them equally and not kill them. Oh, right. Well, actually, that makes sense too.
Yeah.
And then, like, well, actually, this is like, you can't just turn up and be like, the seeds of war are in all of, that go through our whole society, from the clothes you wear to the food you eat to, you know, it's not just whether you support a political party that wants to go to war. And, you know, if you're really interested in peace and you really don't want to fight, you've got to try and work to reduce them, campaign to end injustices in society.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, like, how... Because you've talked about two things there. How interwoven is your faith with your political activism? Do one come before the other, or do they go hand in hand, or what?
For me, I think this varies a lot. You know, Quakers don't have a creed, so there's no, like, this is what we say. Mm-hmm. So for me, I feel absolutely they're hand in hand and they're part of it. I think that's quite common, but it's often expressed in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do a lot of protests, I do a lot of you know, activism and campaigning. A lot of other people might be involved in anything from political activism in a party to, you know, being a nurse or helping asylum seekers or whatever. There isn't any Quaker that, like, works in the city and then plays golf on weekends.
Okay.
You know, they're like, yeah, you know, they might have a normal job, but then they'll do something useful with their own time or whatever. So,
right, right.
Yeah, so for me, I'm just, it's absolutely totally linked, and I can't, it's like the core of who I am, really.
So where are you from?
I'm from Wimbledon in London.
Wimbledon, London, right, yeah. Okay. And do you have, like, a Quaker, like, circle of friends? You go to the meetings? Or is it something more personal? Or both, perhaps?
I mean, I've got a lot of friends who are Quakers. But they'll always be my friends even if I'm not a Quaker. I've got a lot of friends that used to be Quakers.
Right, okay.
I know them because... But I'm a Quaker first. And, like, for me, almost, like, going to a Quaker meeting...
Yeah.
...is a really... That's an important part of my life and my spiritual life and whatever, but... My Quakerism isn't for, like, an hour on Sunday and then it stops. It's, like, it's food my whole life. So it's about how I live everything, and that's really how I express it.
Yeah, I can understand that. So is it something... You said you're not evangelical as the British Quakers, really. But is it something you talk to non-Quaker friends about... and explain your beliefs, or is it something, like I said, more personal?
If they ask, I'm really happy to, but, like, I think part of it is when you think everyone's equal, then why would you know better than them?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so why would you go around telling people what to believe? So, yeah, it's kind of almost like part of Quakerism is that, like, well, if you're equal, then make up your own mind. There's a great outreach poster, actually. It's on Streatham Meeting House, the Brixton Meeting House just up the road, which just says, "Thou shalt decide for yourself."
Right, right. That's great. So it kind of runs through the whole belief system. So to talk about your attempted disarmament of the Saudi fighter jets.
Mm.
Are you okay to talk about this?
Yeah.
I mean, can you talk me through that? Did that come from... Because in some of the press I read, you Quaker was attached to your name.
Yeah.
So is it something that came from a... kind of... came from your faith? Is it something that you were representing...
Yeah.
You were representing Quakers when you did that?
No. I was representing me, but okay. I am a Quaker. So I think there's two things I need to explain first. One...
Yeah.
Got to get a good press release out there.
Right.
And if you want people to read it... saying that a reverend broke into a base is how they open that. And so I had to be called a Quaker, because if he's a reverend...
That's right, because you were with a Methodist reverend, is that right?
Yeah, and the son ran the ecumenically incorrect priest breaks into... Vicar breaks into arms base.
Right.
Oh, he's actually a reverend, but, you know, whatever. And, yeah, that was really cool.
And so that's how your faith was like.
But also, so the first thing I have to do is explain to you what I think about God.
Okay.
Because for me, I felt like I was being, like God told me to do this. And that sounds batshit crazy. So let me explain it.
Okay.
Let me explain it. So, like, for me, God is like everything that's alive and living and is connected. It's not a bearded white man in the sky.
Yeah.
It's definitely not a bearded white man in the sky, do you know what I mean? No offense to bearded white man.
Yeah.
I
thought he made us in his image, for God's sake, that's what I mean.
Exactly.
So I
felt like a calling. I was on Twitter at work. I spend too much time on Twitter, and I saw this thing pop up, and it was like this British bomb had exploded in a food store in Yemen, and they'd found the fragment of the bomb, like the casing with all the serial numbers, hadn't been blown up by some, you know, chance. And it was made in Glenrothes in Scotland by Raytheon.
Wow. Okay.
And I just felt like this, I had to do something, like I was put on this planet to do something about it. And I remember wandering around the office in a bit of daze going like, this is outrageous, and everyone's going like, yeah, it is, but you know what you can do. And I was like, well, I'm going to do something.
Right.
And so I started asking around people, like, and I knew, and I thought about it, and you know, I've been involved in anti-arms trade stuff since I was like 15, you know, and I've done petitions, stalls, met the MP, written to the MP, I've dressed up as an elf, I've dressed up as a baby, I've done actions with props, I've done blockades of things, I've done everything. And I just thought the only thing we can do is try and actually stop it now, like, cause this isn't working. The government's absolutely determined to arm Saudi, and this is central part of their foreign policy, so right, we've just got to go in and stop it. So I started asking around for people who wanted to do something, and I thought we're probably going to go to prison for this, because we're going to try and get in and smash it up.
As soon as I read it, I thought I wouldn't be able to contact you, because it's the sort of thing that they'd make an example of you, almost, you know.
Yeah.
That's what I was expecting.
Yeah.
So when the mayor said you weren't in jail,
well, that's what we were expecting.
And, that's a big thing, though. That's a really big thing, to go in kind of expecting or prepared for that.
Yeah. So I kept asking people, and they kept being like, kind of, but no, not in the right place in my life. And fair enough, because, you know, like, being like, probably going to go to jail, it's a bit weird. And I was at a wedding of some activist mates. There was a guy there who I'd seen on a bunch of demos, and I was like, are you Woody? I mean, and so at Quaker wedding, it was a Quaker wedding.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really cool, because everyone marries through.
Right.
So everyone has to sign the wedding certificate. So at the end of it, there's a queue. Like, Quaker weddings are awesome. If you get a chance, like, people just stand up and speak, they say lovely stuff. They're brilliant.
Yeah.
Like, I've never known anyone not to like them. And there's a queue. Everyone has to sign the certificate because you'll marry them, right?
Yeah.
So, and there's this guy, and he's in front of me, and I've seen him on some demos. So I'm like, are you Woody? And he's like, yeah, I am. And I'm like, do you want to take some direct action about the war in Saudi? Yeah, so I've known him for 5 seconds now.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm actually really looking for that. And I'm like, it might involve getting arrested. And he was like, that's fine. I'm like, it'll probably involve going to prison for a couple of years. He's like, I'm so here for that. And then it was like, you know, within 30 seconds, we'd agreed to go to jail.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was just like, it felt like this was completely meant to be. It's like, that this conversation doesn't happen. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you don't meet someone and they're like, let's go to jail.
Exactly the same thing.
And he was, totally. And he was looking for something to do.
Yeah. And then who made the plan to actually go to the airbase?
So we made the plan, and we found out that all of that, like, so the majority of the Saudi Air Force are made and maintained in this one airbase in Wharton in Lancashire. And it's a bombing war. And when we found this out, and we found out that there was an order of 72 jets that are going through, which is one of the biggest arms deals of all time, Eurofighter typhoons going through, and the last ones were just being finished off. So you had to go ASAP to try and break in and do it.
What happened on your inside? What happened?
Well, let me tell you one more thing. Yeah, is that 21 years to the day before, three women had broken into the same base and they had successfully disarmed a plane going to Indonesia that was used in genocide. Right. And they were put up on trial in a Crown Court for years, like going to jail for 10 years, whatever, serious criminal damage charges. And they got found not guilty eventually, which was great. But basically, this base has got like a decades-long history of involvement in war crimes.
Right.
It is a black stain on the consciousness of our country. It's awful. And so we were looking at days to go in, and we need to do it on a Sunday, and we need to do it as soon as possible. And the first Sunday we could do happened to be the Sunday, like 21 years after they broke in.
Oh, wow.
It was
okay.
Bonkers. It was like, this is meant to happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Shall I tell you how it went down?
Tell me, yeah.
So we did loads of prep and we went up, and I went up to Leeds where he was, he had his parish, and we did loads and loads of prep, and we'd scouted the base like several times and all that. We read the book of the last people that Dylan.
Right.
Reads a lot like a manual in parts.
Does it really?
Yeah. It literally ends in lists of things you'd need.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, it's called The Hammer Blow. It's really good. So we went down, we cut through where we planned to cut through, got the bolt cutters there, went through like butter, cut through the second fence again, really, really quick, and then we went and kind of wandered along a hedgerow, and then there was this giant flood lit like taxiway that's like the kind of a football pitch long across, like huge. And the main hangar where we knew the Saudi planes were going to be. And then we just walked across that calmly, because we just thought, if we leg it, they'll see us.
Yeah.
So let's just pretend we're not. And when we got to the first door of the hangar, and we're like, we'll probably have to go around the back and break in. We'll just try every door.
Mm-hmm.
And it just fucking opened.
Wow.
So we were just like, okay. And there was a corridor that's like maybe 5 meters long, and then a final security door. And this door had like a card beepy thing on.
Mm-hmm.
And and there were two windows in it. And through the windows, we could see the nose cone of a Eurofighter Typhoon.
Right.
So like a meter and a half away. Like we were there, and so we got, and it had an anti-jimmy lift to stop you crowbarring the door open, which we crowbarred off, and then but that was riveted on.
Right.
So when it was like bam, 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 when that came off,
yeah,
because all the rivets were like going out, and that was very loud. And then we were like crowbarring off the door, and we almost had it off the hinges, and these two like big blokes peered through the window and were like, "What are you doing?" And I was like, "Yeah, I was just like," so we put down our tools because we weren't here for a fight.
Yeah, yeah.
And they came through the door and we were like, "They're like, what are you doing here?" And I was like, "We're here to disarm the Saudi Eurofighter Typhoons because they're being involved in war crimes in Yemen."
Yeah.
And they were like, "Oh, better call that in us, I guess. Would you mind waiting outside?" And we were like, yeah, so we did. And then like lots of flashing lights and security.
Yeah.
They couldn't actually find where we got in. So I went and showed them where we cut through the hole. And then we got in their van, and they drove us to the entrance. The police turned up and arrested us.
What were you planning to do if you had got through that door?
So we actually had one of the hammers.
Okay.
From the first time.
How did you get that?
So Campaign in Selms Trade happened, and I just told them I needed it for an event, and they were like, yeah, sure.
It's not a lie, really. You need it for an event. Wow.
So I borrowed that. Increased its value, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And went and so we'd read the schematics for the planes, which you can find online.
Yeah.
And there's obviously things like that you don't want to touch, like engines, But, you know, for instance, the nose cone is where the radar is. Radar, very sensitive. Hammers, not so good for radar. And there's a whole bunch of places which you can very easily... I mean, these planes are very thin. You know, so the top of the wing, not the bottom, but the top, you just go straight through, giant fiberglass piece, and then
renders
you need a new wing.
Right.
We were going to decommission them. And we were there to cause the maximum amount of damage in terms of stopping utility rather than in terms of cash. You know, we just wanted to take these things out of action. Yeah.
So then you got put in, you got arrested, and then what happened after?
So the police...
I bet they were totally shocked, right?
Yeah, they didn't know what to do.
Because it's a kind of complex crime. You're not trying to steal anything. It's political. It's political. So I guess they didn't know. Perhaps weren't prepared for that.
Yeah, exactly. But... So initially they treated it with utmost seriousness, but very quickly it became apparent that they were handling us very sensitively. They wanted to get the Reverend in his frock out of that police cell as soon as possible.
Was in his frock?
Yeah, fully.
Wow.
Fully. You should have seen it when they, like, he loosened his. When we were waiting outside, there was like six security around us, and I was like, damn, mate. I was like, what? And I'm like, just loosen the thing, and you could just see him be like, oh, bugs.
Why do you think they wanted to get him out?
Just because I think if you're a policeman, you like the social status is very similar to a reverend, and you just want that out and go with it.
Yeah.
We thought we were going to go to prison. We carried a statement with us saying, and a list of plane serial numbers, and those planes are worth easily the best part of £1 billion. You know, our lawyer said this was probably the biggest ever attempt to do criminal damage, conspiracy to do criminal damage in UK legal history. But they didn't bother charging us with that because that has to go to a Crown Court, has to sit in front of a jury, and would have got huge publicity. And they know as well as we do that we want publicity and they don't want it.
Of course.
You know, the arms trade doesn't talk about the fact that it's arming what the UN calls the world's largest humanitarian disaster. Yeah, they don't want to talk about it. They're not going to win. So we were offered cautions in the police stations, which was like, you know, the slap on the wrist. And we were like, well, we're not going to take them because we haven't done anything wrong.
Yeah.
And we were then, eventually we were put on trial in front of, for criminal damage to the fence. So despite this, you know, we deliberately took the smoking gun of evidence, you know, a signed statement saying we were trying to do this ridiculous amount of criminal damage. And they ignored that and said, we're going to do you for
criminal damage
of the value of 2 times up to £1,000. And the thing is that at £5,000 you get to go to the Crown Court. So they would so we asked our lawyer to argue up the damage.
Because you wanted all the publicity, you wanted to be a bigger, right?
Yeah, and we wanted to sit in front of a jury. And they wanted this, they can't let us go. But they wanted to bury this, they wanted this to go away. So we were really delighted. And also the thing is that magistrates are very much more likely to convict. You know, because they're not a jury. So we were fairly certain we'd get a limited slap on the wrist sentence for this. We didn't, because we had really good lawyers, and also we didn't commit a crime.
So, yeah, wow. Yeah. God, that is... It's lucky, but it's kind of... It all totally makes sense. They kind of want to bury it.
I think by being so willing, and we talked in interviews how we were willing to go to jail for, you know, 10 years is the maximum sentence we could have got.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were willing to do that, and we'd worked out a plan to do that. You know, and we had people who could act for us, and they were fully briefed. And, you know, we fully expected 2 years in jail, minimum. And that's kind of what we went into this in our heads with. And they just thought, well, these people aren't scared of that. And so they didn't bother with it.
Yeah, it's not really punishment if you're odd. Well, it is, but, you know. I mean,
don't get me wrong, jail shit.
Yeah.
Very happy not to be in jail.
So, did you, because you were 30 at the time, right?
Yeah.
Did you tell your friends and family everything that you were planning to do?
They knew I was planning a thing, but they couldn't know about it. Because that would make them part of the conspiracy.
Oh, okay.
but like I was very convinced that they would be supportive, and they were. And you know, as a lot of the Quakers, you know, I was working for the Quakers at the time, and they were doing things like looking at if I did go to jail, could I keep doing my job part time from jail?
Wow, okay.
Yeah, so they were really amazing, and they were fully supportive and super, super excited that there was this expression of Quaker faith happening that they totally get and totally get behind.
That's interesting. That's interesting, because I thought, I really thought you could have said they wanted to distance themselves from it, because it could be seen as terrorism if you were perhaps if you were like an Islamist or something.
Well, yeah, we're not like, brown.
But if you were, then they would have been. It could have been.
Well, the Stanza 15. Do you know about them?
No.
15 people broke into Stanza Airport, stopped a deportation flight. I've got a lot of friends involved, including some Quaker friends.
Okay.
And they were charged on terrorism charges.
Yeah, because that's what I immediately thought when I read the article. That's what they could have got.
Well, this was a high likelihood, and we went into it fully prepared for that. But we felt we had to do something about the war in Yemen. Because Britain is complicit in killing children, and that's not okay.
Are you happy with the publicity that you did get? Because it was reported on, you know, perhaps not as big as if you had disarmed them, but...
Well, we were like the number two story
to what you were
in the country for that weekend. And we got, you know, so there was a follow-up deal for 48 jets. You know, I said there was like 72 jets. Yeah, so it was a follow-up deal. Now, that deal isn't happening. And the reason why the deal isn't happening is because campaigners on Shed have won a court case stopping any further arms sales to Saudi. But that deal would have gone through if it wasn't for the heat that this and actions by other people have generated around that. That annoyed the Saudis so much they delayed it enough for the court case to be won.
Wow.
So we've stopped the sale of, you know, the biggest arms export in the UK has been stopped. Largely through the efforts of us, a whole bunch of other people, and campaigners on Shed primarily, who deserve really much credit.
Yeah.
But like I remember, like, you know, people said there's nothing you can do to stop these arms sales.
Yeah.
Like, wrong. We done it together. Yeah. And I'm really, really pleased to have played a small part in that. And I think that's about, like, you know, if you take like a real politic logic, like an NGO logic, you'd never have gone for our campaign. It's a ridiculous, you'd never win it.
Mm-hmm.
But we kind of acted on faith, and we did.
Nice, man, it's commendable, it really is.
Mm.
So to take it back to Quakers, to your faith more so, I mean, what do you think has made the movement last so long? What made you, because you said you drifted away, you moved back towards it. Obviously, it's a big part of British history, but a lot of similar movements have died out since, you know, since the 17th century. So what do you think is it that keeps it going?
So one of the best things that we do is we have like almost it's a testament, really. Like, part of Quakerism is updating Quakerism.
Right, okay.
You know, so, and we struggle with the societal issues of the time. And so, you know, migration is a huge issue at the moment in society. Quakers are doing more and more work around that. And, you know, same-sex marriage. Like, Quakers were the first church to say we want to do this. And we started working on that in the 1950s.
Yeah.
You know, and it took us a while to get to the position we're in now. But, like, we're active about trying to be progressive. And that means that we... I think that means we stay relevant as a faith. Because we keep changing. And I think, and a really interesting way about how it's changing at the moment is we don't have a creed, and there's a lot of Buddhist Quakers and even atheist Quakers. And that's really exciting as well.
So it's like it's inclusive nature as well, I guess. It's because it does seem different to some mainstream religions, and especially Christianity.
Yeah.
Especially with its lack of hierarchies.
Yeah,
it's quite socialist
in
a way.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think that...
Well, if you value everyone equally, why put someone in charge?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just that.
Exactly. So that's pretty much all my questions, man.
Well, I think I'd say also that it's really important that, like, every Quaker I know is involved in some form of social witness.
Right.
Whether that's the board of governors of a school, or they're a teacher or a nurse, or whether they, you know, try and break into bases.
Yeah.
It's, they're all, which is rarer.
Yeah.
But, like, they're all involved in something or other. And I think that's an absolute fundamental cornerstone, that we're not interested in dying and ascending to heaven.
Right.
We're trying to bring about the kingdom of God on earth.
Yeah.
Or the probably more like commune of,
yeah, yeah,
God.
Because you kind of alluded to what you thought of God.
Yeah.
And from what I understand, Quakers believe that it's within us all, there's a divinity within us all.
Yeah.
Which does sound similar to even Hinduism, like the Atman, Hinduism.
Absolutely.
And Buddhism. Well, yeah, and therefore it wouldn't make sense to have clergies and priests. And
exactly. Kind of, why should someone else talk to God for you? Like, yeah. If there's that God in everyone, then you're all equal, and therefore let's get busy with working for peace, let's get busy with campaigning for equality. Yeah, simple.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for listening. That was my chat with Sam Walton, activist, Quaker, bit of a legend, really, I thought. If you want to read the article, it is on the iPaper website. It was actually the newspaper as well. I was buzzing. It was the first time I've had something in a national newspaper. But the article's called Quakerism Was Cool With Me, Not Believing in God, Why the Quakers Have a Surprisingly Modern Approach. Basically, just type in Quakers and iNews or iPaper or whatever, and you'll find it if you want to know more about the Quakers from the article that I wrote. Album recommendation. Fuck it, I'm going to give you one anyway because I think this is interesting. Famous Quakers. There's a few. Richard Nixon, the old president of the United States, he was a Quaker, but I'm not going to recommend one of his albums. Did he even do albums? Who knows? But I am going to recommend the Talking Heads' Remain in Light. My favourite Talking Heads album from 1980. And the reason I'm recommending this is because David Byrne is a Quaker. Oh, he talks about in interviews how he was raised on tolerant Quaker ideologies. So he was raised in a Quaker household. I think he still identifies as a Quaker. So Remain in Light by Talking Heads. Cool. And if you want to listen to someone else, listen to Waco, that's my band. Or just, there's plenty of other cool bands out there, as you know. Find me on Twitter at JAK_TH. You know, I hope you're all well and sane in this quarantine. It's unprecedented times, you know. I don't know if you want any recommendations. I'm always looking for recommendations, things to read, articles, books, films to watch. Just whatever, send them my way and I'll return the favour. Happy quarantine, guys. Thanks for listening.